May it please the court, my name is Bianca Eden, and I am here on behalf of the appellant, Jokers Paving, in this matter that comes before the court from transfer from the Eastern District Court of Appeals. I would point out that Jokers appealed the decision of the trial court in Jefferson County on several issues. I'm going to focus first off on the issue that brought it before this court, and that issue being whether or not a plaintiff can obtain loss of use for a vehicle that was replaced and not repaired. Now, both myself...
But it's really, the real question is the nature of the vehicle. If this was a 1999 Ford F-150 that got destroyed, you could go to a used truck dealer and buy one, but this was actually a specially equipped piece of equipment, so he's going to have some time involved, irrespective of the financing issues, that he's going to be without this equipment that he's used in his business.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that's what Orvie Williams set forth. I mean, Orvie Williams...
No, I'm just talking about the realities of the case. Let's talk about the realities of the case, and then I think the real issue is how the precedents fit in to that, because the normal rule is that when you've got something destroyed, a piece of personal property, there's no loss of use because the market will supply another piece of equipment. But in that case, it's not really the case here, is it?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, they had their expert who testified that a new piece of equipment could have been had in 2 to 3 weeks. They also, at the time of the accident, only had one vehicle in operation. Their second vehicle had been essentially decommissioned. They were going to just get the parts off of it to use when they got another vehicle to replace that. They actually got that vehicle back onto job sites within 8 business days.
Now, I think Judge Wolf's question, though, is that for the reasonable time that it would have taken to replace the truck, for the 2 or 3 weeks, they might be entitled to loss of use for that 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, if they are, then that is the reversal of the Orvie Williams, because Orvie Williams sets forth that that there's two types of vehicles, that you have a vehicle that's damaged and able to be repaired, and the other class is that's the destroyed. And those that are destroyed are law in Missouri was that it's not available for loss of use.
But then if that's the law, then you would agree that the plaintiff is not under that law obtaining full recovery, because they truly couldn't use the vehicle until it was replaced.
Well, then they're under
2 or 3 weeks.
Then they're under the classification of it being replaced. Now, in Orvie Williams, the court found
I'm asking, then wouldn't that law, if the law is that way, wouldn't that leave the plaintiff without recourse for the 2 or 3 weeks it would take to reasonably replace the vehicle?
Yes.
And you're arguing that's what the law is.
But we're asking you to tell us why that's good policy. It was Orr right in saying that. Why shouldn't they get that period, I think?
And then... In addition to that, respond to the Parcel versus Buttes case that came after Orvie Williams, which involved a concrete plant that fell over. And the Western District in that case allowed for replacement cost plus loss of profits for a month or two afterwards during the time it took to reconstruct the portable concrete plant.
And you may be right, it's good or bad policy, but just citing the case, tell us why it's right or wrong, that case and Orr.
The parcel?
Go ahead, sure.
Parcel, because I'm actually not familiar with that case. But if it's a concrete plant that was built, it's
portable concrete plant.
Portable concrete plant. I can't answer to that case. I was not familiar with that case. I mean, all I know is that it did not overturn the Orvie Williams case. And I mean,
the point being that the purpose of these damages is to make the person whole or make the company whole. And in the normal case, replacement cost will largely do that. But if there's going to necessarily be some reasonable period of time and you disagree with that is, before you get the replacement, why isn't that a loss that the company suffered, and therefore why is it not appropriate for damages, whatever Orr may have said? Tell us a good policy reason why it should not be.
Your Honor, I can't really state that there's a good or bad policy reason why. All I can state is that's what the law was. And there's a lot of law that's not, that does not make a person whole. It just depends on what the remedies set forth.
But you understand that we can revise the law looking at the policy, what makes sense in the real world, as Judge Wolf is saying. We want to know what makes sense.
things don't come up here. They come up here when there's a question about it, and was or correctly decided, or did it not address this issue? Maybe it wasn't an issue in that case. There wasn't a substantial period of lost profits. Maybe there's very good reasons why you can't make someone completely whole, and you have to have a generally applicable rule, maybe, or just didn't think about that and missed something.
Well, Your Honor, or was a repair case. So it wasn't dealing with the replacement issue. The issue with replacement, though, is with repair, you're not increasing, you're not adding extras onto it. If say, you had a vehicle, I guess, 10 years, it had certain things on it, and you replace that, but you're going to replace it with the high-tech, top-of-the-line, all of that, that's going to be possibly an extended period of time of replacement than it would be if it was just repaired. I think with repair, you can give a set figure as to how long it's going to take for that repair and what that reasonable time would be.
Wasn't the policy reiterated in Ameristar when our goal is to fully and fairly compensate for the loss but not to give the plaintiff a windfall?
Yes, Your Honor. But the issue in Ameristar was this was not an issue that was raised in
Ameristar. Wasn't the issue, but wasn't the policy stated in these types of cases?
The policy of fully compensating, true. But you still have to then determine the reasonable time.
So should we take into account, here it wasn't 2 or 3 weeks, it was
2 years.
2 years. And opposing counsel says, well, his client just didn't have the money to get this done more quickly, and therefore they really did lose all that money. Is that something we should take into account, or do you look at what the average person's more an objective standard, how long it would take
to replace? I think the case law is pretty clear, though. When it comes to financial position, Crank v. Firestone, and that was a much shorter time period. That was a guy, he repaired the vehicle. It sat in the repair shop for 2 months because he couldn't afford to pay for the repairs. Well, the court did not award, and it was because he couldn't afford to. The court didn't award that money because he didn't award for the rental period for that time because there was no testimony as to why. And in the case at hand, all there was the blanket testimony, just the statement of them that, well, they couldn't afford it. There wasn't any introduction of tax returns showing that they couldn't afford it. There wasn't any, and in fact, the tax return that we introduced showed that they'd put $66,000 of depreciable assets into business the next year. But so when you're looking at
couldn't afford it. You just said, I can't afford it?
That's what they stated.
What's the record reflect?
The record reflects that there's nothing in the record that shows that they could afford it.
Well, you said the record reflects they had assets they chose to use invest in the business otherwise than
exactly,
in replacing this.
Exactly. And it shows that the record, there was testimony that they'd hired new employees. And the thing is you have to have the diligence. You get to that, when you get to that reasonable as a standard, it's the time period.
They failed to mitigate damages, is
what
you're saying.
Yeah, essentially. But it's their burden to show the reasonableness. It's their burden to show that they exercise due diligence in trying to correct the issue.
Was this a court-tried case or a jury case?
Court-tried.
Okay. Well, why can't we assume that the court, in limiting the evidence and considering the evidence, made a factual finding in accordance with the evidence, at least out to some point in time, that the person couldn't afford it? In other words, if they testified they couldn't afford it, that might be some evidence to support the trial judge's decision that they couldn't afford it.
Well, like I said, in Craig versus Firestone, that was the same decision that the judge there made, and they reversed it because they said there was nothing there.
You believe the law is that if a person can't afford it, that that's really irrelevant?
No, Your Honor. I'm saying that but stating they can't afford it and showing that they can't afford it are two different things. Yes. I'm saying that they could have presented evidence that showed that.
Yeah, but Judge Fisher said that the trial judge actually made a finding on that.
Well, yeah, but then it's the question of the sufficiency of the evidence.
So what was the evidence? I mean, was there evidence they applied for loans they couldn't get?
No, there was no evidence of that. There was no evidence that they applied for loans. There was no evidence.
Well, wasn't there? I thought they had to borrow money to replace it, and therefore the trial judge even gave them an award of interest.
But that's one of my other issues with
that,
it. But
that was also mentioned in the partial case that the appellate court from the Western District found that interest was just another consequential damage that was awarded to the plaintiff in that case based upon the loss of a piece of property that was somewhat unique. Why wouldn't that? I guess
well,
two things.
I mean,
things.
This was a vehicle. This was essentially a vehicle that, and I understand that that partial cases was a traveling concrete plant, but this vehicle was. The thing is that they did replace it, though. They replaced it in the 8 days it took to get their decommissioned vehicle back in service. So they had a vehicle. Their business.
So that, but didn't, but that didn't business. The court consider that maybe the trial court thought they mitigated their damages? In other words, since they couldn't afford to replace this when they did the best they could.
But then why award them the 2 years' worth of lost profits? Because if they've mitigated, then they've mitigated by getting it back in those 8 days. And I can address, I'd actually like to address the lost profits issue, because even if you deem that they can get loss of use and that 2 years is reasonable, there's a problem with the math in how their expert determined the revenue. I was a history major, but it's basic math. So essentially, I don't dispute what their expenses were. I don't dispute anything about expenses. It's what their expert used to determine their revenue. She used census records of housing permits and construction payroll. She took the increase between 2001 and 2002 of 18% in construction and applied that to what their actual 2001 their revenue was to determine what their 2002 revenue should have been. And keep in mind that this accident occurred 2 days before Thanksgiving in 2002. And on the date of the accident, there was 35 days left in the year. Their 2001 gross was $528,037.70. Multiplying that by 1.18 to increase it by 18% for the next year is $623,084.48. Their gross of 2002 was $433,649.29. If you give them what they testified was their maximum they ever got in a day of $4,000 per day, and giving them weekends, it would have taken them 47 days to equal that gross. It's not based in fact. And giving them their average of 25 days, 2,500 per day, is still 77.75 days. And this is what she based their entire testimony on lost profits on. It's a mathematical impossibility for them to have reached that because they didn't have enough days left in the year.
What are her credentials?
She was a CPA. She was their CPA.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Mark Kregel for the respondent, in this case, Gateway Foam Insulators. And I think the issue is solely before this Court was not directly addressed by this Court in the Samistar decision in 2005, and that is this. In 2005, this Court raised its foot, but did not set its foot down because there was no platform for it to set down. And the issue is this, that's been directly placed before this Court by Gateway. Can a company with a non-fungible, unique piece of equipment receive both its lost profit damages and its reasonable market value for that piece of property where it is destroyed? I think the answer to that question is yes, for several reasons. One most important reason is that the appellant, in its brief and in its reply, has not provided this Court or anybody a sound, logical reason why OR is still applicable. In fact, if you research the issue as an OR under Dobbs, that rule under Orr versus Williams is so archaic. There are three basic foundations for that rule. One, that the party lost the interest in the property at the time of its destruction. That is simply not logical and doesn't mean anything. They still have a right. They still own the property. The second foundation for the Orr rule, at least as far as I can find in my research from Dobbs, is that interest, the payment of interest on the lost property would fully compensate the party. Now, that does have some foundation in Missouri law, in the law of conversion. In fact, there are cases in Missouri where when a piece of property is converted wrongfully, the loss of use damages are awarded. But again, that still does not make a party perfectly
whole.
So
is 2 years of lost use, is that reasonable? Couldn't you get another vehicle within 2 years?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the facts of this case and the evidence before this Court was uncontroverted. There was a 7-hour bench tried case in which the plaintiff had an expert testify for 15 minutes.
What was the evidence? Because I don't remember any that showed why they couldn't just, they applied for a loan 2 years later. Why couldn't they apply for it within the 2 to 3 weeks?
Your Honor, I think the CPA, Ms. Cindy Burke, testified to the judge that she was extremely familiar with this plaintiff's business. She was familiar with all the records, had been their accountant since the inception, had testified before the court that they were mortgaging property to try to keep this business running. They had two vehicles at the time. One was decommissioned. One was being overhauled in a shop so that they could take that equipment and put it onto a truck.
So they would have a single
so
truck
they would
to
have,
use.
So they would, they had, so they would have two trucks running.
They would, no, but they were decommissioning the second one so they could keep the first one going.
Right. At the time of the accident, they had two trucks. They decommissioned the first one to revamp and overhaul the equipment to put it on a new truck. They were going to have two trucks the whole time. The plan was to have two trucks the whole time. Vis Medeski, the owner of the company, testified that they had enough work to keep both trucks running to double up on a job so that the two crews would show up on a job.
They only had one truck, so how long would it take to get the second truck? 2 years?
It took approximately 2 years to get the truck up and running because of the financial situations and because of the loss of the business that happened here.
I'm not clear how the evidence supports that. They had one truck running. They were going to take parts from it to keep one truck running, but they got their damaged truck running in a few weeks. However long it took them to get it running. Weren't they at that point in the same position they would have been in before, having one truck?
Because they had a significant amount of business. We had a company that started with an $89,000 first year gross revenue. To the time of the point of this accident, your question.
And you said they were going to have to buy a new truck. They had to have some money they were going to use. Just to address that.
Right.
So
and
how they were still going to.
And I'm getting to that issue. That. At the time of this accident, they had a significant amount of work built in and built up and work to be done. They only had one truck, and the evidence that was presented to the court in an appendix, I think it's Exhibit 3 or Exhibit 9, I'm not sure, in the appendix, indicates that they lost 67 days of lost time because they could not get to the jobs they had. Since they didn't have this second truck that was destroyed and being and held by the defendants in this case, they had to spend time to go take out a loan, get money, and in the process they began losing business. They lost customers, they lost clientele, their goodwill.
How much time does it take to spend time to get a loan? And I mean, you fill out the forms, if they give you the money, they give you the money.
Well, they couldn't get the money. That was the issue. And Ms. Burke testified they couldn't get the loans, and Ms. Vineski testified that they couldn't get the loans. Eventually, they wound up getting a line of credit, and they purchased a new vehicle, and then over a period of time had as assets and money was earned through the business as they worked Mr. and Mrs. Vineski worked 7 days a week, they were putting new equipment into this truck that they were building. It took them approximately 1 year to build this truck. This is not a truck that you can go down the road and rent.
It's a unique piece of property. Isn't this case really nothing more than a sufficiency of the evidence case?
I agree with you, absolutely. This is the credibility of the witnesses case. The judge has absolute discretion to determine the credibility of the witnesses.
What evidence was there of the overhead, of the cost that it would have had to operate the truck, to repair it, to hire people to run the other truck and so forth, and was that deducted from the prospective profits in order to get what you say were the lost profits?
Absolutely. And Ms. Cindy Burke testified and followed right down along the lines of this court's ruling in 2005 in Ameristar, which determined how you calculate lost profits. Up until then, there was a split in the authorities. And under Ameristar, Ms. Cindy Burke testified after her, with all of her experience with this company, that she took the profit and loss statements from the company, that she deducted the variable expenses that are in exhibit number, appendix number 9 and 10, that she deducted the variable expenses directly related to the lost unit from the gross revenue after she projected the gross revenue based on her expertise in the information.
But she didn't project it based on their work pattern, but on the census and what she thought would have.
No, she took what she had in front of her from the tax returns, from her expertise with the company, from the information she had. Then she went and she looked at what was the construction industry doing as a whole at the time.
What I'm getting to is, I thought, if I recall, maybe these were overturned by later cases. There were cases saying you have to show customers turned away, you have to show business you didn't get. You can't just say, I would have expanded, gosh, people would have come to me. You actually have to show that you lost business. Now, if you're trying to get an expansion, as opposed to showing like existing business that or existing customers that left.
Yes, that is correct, and we did show that. We did show that with an exhibit that was admitted that showed 60 days of lost customers. There were days in which they could not get to jobs.
But what about the other 2 years is what I'm...
I don't know if there was evidence with regard to the expansion of time. I know that Ms. Vineski testified to actual customers. Now, Ms. Vineski testified that they got knocked out on their knees, that they couldn't get to customers, that they lost clientele, that certain customers were calling over this period of time saying, can you get to our job in 2 weeks? No, we cannot. We only have one rig, and that rig's not running very well. We can get to it in 6. Those people lost jobs. Then competitors started coming in. This was a company, this was the only company in the St. Louis region doing this type of work.
But this is over the 2-year period you have that, or that was the first 60 days and you proved lost profits during that time, and then you're saying you can extend that out over the next 2 years?
I'm saying that the court, in projecting lost profits, this court has been very clear that there is always going to be a certain room for speculation, that although you cannot speculate to lost profits, there is always a degree of uncertainty as to lost profits, that there's not going to be an exact figure that can be found. But what must be shown is that there is an adequate basis for a rational estimate to a reasonable degree of certainty based on the CPA's understanding of what this company would have earned over that period of time. She had enough evidence in front of her, and as an expert, her testimony was introduced as an expert, and the trial court had broad discretion to take a look at that and determine the credibility of that witness and the credibility of the testimony and the evidence before it. This is a discretion case. This is a judge-tried case. Ms. Burke testified to all of the evidence which is in the appendix, testified to the reasonableness of the lost profits over that period, and the trial court had all broad discretion in whether to determine the truth.
The standard review is clearly erroneous?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question.
Standard review is clearly erroneous?
I believe the standard is abuse of discretion or a misapplication of the law or clearly does not apply the law.
To rule in your favor, do we have to overrule Orr?
No, I do not believe you have to overrule Orr v. Williams. In fact, I think this court can just modify Orr versus Williams. And I've pointed out several cases around from several Supreme Courts that surround the state, Kansas, Nebraska, Arkansas, Iowa, and numerous other Supreme Court states and sister states around the United States who have simply taken the restatement second of torts 927 and modified that rule. And I would put forth that this modification would be appropriate, that the loss of use damages are recoverable in total destruction cases with certain provisions. One, that the plaintiff may not delay in determining whether or not the vehicle is totally destroyed or repairable. That two, that the time to replace the vehicle must be reasonable. And three, that the lost profits may not be proven with speculation. This court has already said in Amistar how to calculate lost profits and whether or not they can be speculative. They cannot be speculative, and they were not speculative in this case. So we're not asking this court to overrule Orr. In fact, none of the other Supreme Courts who followed a rule exactly like Orr overruled their rule. They just modified their rule. And that makes sense. That's the logical explanation as to how this court can take its Amistar decision and now put its foot down on the platform that Gateway has provided it. It is just that simple. If we get to that point in Missouri, I think that all of the cases that come forth after this case, that the plaintiff who has a non-fungible, and remember, this is a commercial vehicle that you just can't go and rent. The appellant has raised, and Judge Wolf asked, I believe, about Crank. Crank is distinguishable because that dealt with a case that was just an average, everyday car. Anybody can go rent a car. Okay, there are certain situations, and I've provided the court hypotheticals that I made up, about a farmer with a Ford pickup truck that's specially utilized on a farm. If he loses that vehicle, which he could just go buy a pickup truck, but especially...
Well, what if he says they couldn't afford it because his kids had to go to college and they couldn't afford the payments?
I don't think that's reasonable. I think a trial court could look at that in the trial court's discretion to determine if that's a reasonable answer or a reasonable basis. I don't believe that would be reasonable.
Well, what if he had to buy seed?
I think buying seed may be reasonable if he couldn't get. Let's say he could go buy a pickup truck or rent a pickup truck to go buy seed. You can throw seed in the back of a pickup truck.
No, I'm saying instead of paying for repairing the truck or getting a new truck or refitting a new truck, he needed to spend that money to buy seed for his farm.
Well, I think that would be a consequential damage. I think that may be a special damage that he'd have to allege.
But do you get to pick and choose what to pay and what not to pay and say, you know, I had other needs that were more pressing. That's why I didn't buy a new special vehicle or commission a new special vehicle because we had other business needs that are more pressing. But what gives you the right to make that determination as opposed to trying to mitigate your damages by immediately looking for a replacement vehicle. Because in effect, you're getting the full value of the vehicle plus 2 years worth of not even having a vehicle but getting all the profits you would have had. It gives you something at some point that you would not otherwise have had the opportunity to have.
And if I think I understand you, Ms. Chief Justice, I think I understand your question correctly. You're asking, what basis can a plaintiff use to show reasonableness of the time period? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
And I think that what basis needs to be shown is by what profits, how their company is run. How does it work, and what areas of their company lost profits, and what areas of the company needed to be maintained in order to run the company?
Or do we leave the reasonableness determination to the trial court?
Right. And answering your question,
in a jury case, the trial judge could just limit the evidence to the time frame that he thought was reasonable, right?
Correct.
And in a trial case, the judge could sit there and decide, well, I wonder how long is reasonable.
Correct.
And then what we would do as appellate courts is decide whether or not there's any evidence to support those findings.
I agree with you, Your Honor, and that goes right to Chief Justice's Stith's argument as to what is reasonable. Is it reasonable for a company to have to keep the lights on? Yes. Is it reasonable for a company to have to buy seed to keep the corn in? Yes. Is it reasonable for them to have to buy fuel? Yes. Is it reasonable for them to have to go take
meals? I'm not clear on this record why your company wouldn't have been in that exact same position, regardless of this accident, because it just had one working vehicle and was going to have to borrow money to get a second one anyway. So isn't this just the same situation
it's going to be in? Those costs that I just mentioned are not direct costs related to this unit. What you have to show is, for the reasonableness of the time period, what costs are directly related to this unit to deduct to get the lost profits. If you can show that those costs are directly related to this unit and over that period of time that you could not make a profit because you didn't have that vehicle, then yes, I think you can show reasonableness. I think this court can construct a rule based on the restatement of seconds, which is this court has done in the past, which looks to the restatements for guidance, can construct a rule to guide.
Is there a case that specifically talks about when you shift the burden of the plaintiff not being able to obtain financing to the defendant?
I do not have a case directly on point, Your Honor, but I believe that's a mitigation of damages affirmative defense. And the court should be reminded that
isn't that the real issue here?
That is the real issue.
Is it reasonable for the courts to shift the burden of your client's financial inability to get money to defendant in an accident that occurred and damaged equipment that could have been replaced but was not because of the financial problem?
And if the defendant raises the affirmative defense of mitigation of damages, which the defendant and the appellant in this case did not, then yes, I believe that burden would shift to the plaintiff to overcome that affirmative defense. And if you can show that, I think under a rule that's fashioned along the sister Supreme Court states of Missouri following restatements of torts, I think that burden would shift. I think that defendants would be protected by that affirmative defense, and I think the trial judge could limit the testimony in a court-tried case. I see that my time is almost up. I thank you for hearing this.
Oh, it's up.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry. Thank you very much. I apologize.
Your Honors, the question of reasonableness, the burden is upon the plaintiff in the case to show the reasonableness. In the situation of Crank, while yes, it was over the rental cost, it's the same issue of whether or not a person could afford it. In that case, the court determined the only evidence of the inability was the blanket statement that they couldn't afford it.
Well, just say, we're on that discussion about whether this is really the burden of the plaintiff to show that the time period was reasonable, or if it's a matter of mitigation of damages, that would be your burden to show that he didn't mitigate his damages in a timely fashion. And frankly, borrowing a phrase from the tort law, you take your plaintiff as you find him, or to look at it another way, since your client is the wrongdoer, isn't that then your burden to show that he didn't mitigate his damages, that he has extended his damages out by way of an affirmative defense, placing that burden upon you?
At some point, yes. And if they had come in and produced testimony as to loans they've attempted to do and things like that, then, yeah, they've presented evidence, and then it switches to, well, you applied for this loan and they offered it, you just didn't like the interest rate that they were going to give you for it. But in this case, there wasn't any of that. It was just the blanket statement. And we did show that even without pleading an affirmative defense.
But then when you go back and forth on this level of detail, and there has been an extraordinary amount of detail in this argument for something that I'm listening to as an appellate judge, don't we then have to say, well, the trial judge sorted out these details and we should give a certain amount of deference to his findings as long as there was evidence to support them? I mean, I might think that something much shorter is reasonable, but he said, you know, this is reasonable, and so why? What basis do we have for overturning his? It's really a matter of allocating who's going to do what in the court system.
It's sufficiency of the evidence, but as I stated before, Your Honor, even if you do find the 2 years, the revenue stream, and I'm not talking the expenses and what's deducted from the expenses. I'm talking the estimation of the revenue stream that their accountant used was not based on actual facts, because under their own testimony, they could not reach that revenue in 2002. There was
so
no.
So you're asking for a remand for redetermination of damages on that issue?
Well, Your Honor, it depends on whether or not you determine that 2 years, that
no,
there
was sufficient
evidence. I understand
on that last point you made, on if we got to that last point and decided that the evidence, that the CPA's testimony did not support the damages she testified to. Are you asking this court to offer to come to a different decision on damages or for a remand, or what relief are you requesting?
Well, I think the damages should equal whatever the evidence proved. I don't know that, I don't think there should be a remand for them to then bring in their additional testimony that they didn't have before. And certainly,
I'm afraid
I'm out of time.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.